Well, it's a pleasure to be here today, and being a junior primary teacher, I'm really, really pleased to see all these people here, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed on a Saturday morning, doing your professional development. I think that's a great sign, and particularly about this topic as well, because I think that you are the generation of teachers that are working, setting the benchmark for the experiences of the young children as they go through school. So if you can set them on there in a good stead for the use of ICT, then you're actually putting a lot of pressure on the rest of the system to get their act together and start using ICT really well, because I think that you're the best people to start with the use of ICT, because you connect with children through the inquiry process and you really do use it for all the right reasons. So I think that this is going to be a really good conference for you today. Connecting with the millennium generation.
It's 9 o'clock.
There you go. It's 9 o'clock. Some of you may have seen the video to start with. It was playing up here earlier, and if you haven't had an opportunity to have a look at it, it's actually called Shift Happens with a T. And it actually is available on YouTube, and you can look for it by putting in search terms for Do You Know? With a question mark. I'll put all the URLs, they'll be available to you at the end on my Delicious account, and I'll talk about them at the end. So don't worry about where all these things are, I'll point them out to you later. But there is this video that sets some context for how the world has changed. And it is not just technological change, which I've got up here at the moment. I put that up there because this is an ICT conference and I really want to start off with that sort of context and then build it into how that might mean, what practices will you do with your classroom, what can I do on Monday. But I want to acknowledge that technological change isn't the only thing that is driving change in our schools. So there's a whole lot of economic, social, not to mention environmental changes that are happening as well. And that video really does set the context for the number one country, for example, who is going to be the English-speaking country in the world very shortly, is going to be China. And you just think, wow, there's a lot of things happening in our world, and these are the changes that we need to acknowledge are coming through our system. So let's just focus on technological change, because that's why we're here today, to talk about ICT. And some of you may, in fact, I've got to try and dance around so you can see the screen here, some of you may, in fact, identify with the things that are on the left there. And that was certainly things that I was growing up with, the dial phone and the Walkman that had the tape, and some of you may remember not even having those things. And some of you may think, I don't know what you're talking about, because we've always had some of these things on the right-hand side. But now, the point of this slide is to draw attention to the fact that we have children living in a different technological age. And there's a whole lot more things that they've just grown up with, the things on the right-hand side. In particular, change is exponential. So it's getting more rapid and faster and faster. There's a great book by James Gleick called Faster. He can't even put all the words in the letters of the book. That's how fast it's got to be. He talks about being in a lift. If you're one of those people who have to push the button, you can't wait 4 seconds for the doors to shut, which is the normal programming. You're living in a world that's going faster. You can't even wait 4 seconds. If you want to have a look at what all these new tools are, you may have heard about Web 2 tools and not really known anything about what they are. These are popping up everywhere like mushrooms, and if you check out that URL, go to web2.net, that's a fantastic site that has just pages and pages of all these little icons you can click on, and go and check out what these new Web 2 tools are. I'm not going to give you a technical definition about what this Web 2 means, but I'll give you a working definition that I think is appropriate, what I find helpful. And that is that the internet used to be very much you were on the receiving end, and that you would read the information on the internet and you would actually sit there passively and read it. That was about all you could do. Now, however, it's turned into the read-write web, so that there's over 50% of people can contribute now to what's on the internet. 50%, half of them don't, half of them are at the moment, that's probably going to increase even more. But a lot of people now are publishers of information on the internet, not just consumers. And these things, to publish, some of these little tools here, are as easy as a word processor, even easier. You may have heard of wikis.
Wikis is just like using Word. You just push the button that says edit, you type in what you want to do, just like you type in for your word processor, you push save, and there you are, you've made your own web page already. Okay? There's a few other bits and pieces that you'd need to know, but basically it's very, very easy. You may have heard of podcasting and blogs. We'll talk about them a little bit more, but they are also considered web tutorials. Very easy, push the button, record your voice, chuck in some photos, push save, and there, it's already on the internet. It's fantastic. Now that's sort of the big picture, moving down a little bit. We've got students that are coming through our schools and they're different to how the previous generations have been. And you've probably noticed this, so I'm probably, you know, not telling you anything new. But we've had Generation Y. Now these aren't fixed years when people were born to say, stamp, you were born in this time, therefore you must be generation whatever and you must have those characteristics. That's not the point of this particular exercise. What it is to say, well, roughly somewhere around 1978 to 1994, those generations born then, those children, had some characteristics that are quite different from the children who were born from about 1998, the year 2000 onwards. And lots of people call them different names, but for the purposes of today, I'm going to go with the one where there's a few people, academics, that are calling them the Millennium Generation, which is slightly different from Generation. Often Generation Z is a little bit more broader. Millennium is from 2000 onwards. So these Generation Y, these students who were coming through our schools before, they were quite resilient and mature. There was a great marriage breakdown rate. There was a whole lot of children who were living in split families. There was a whole lot of well done rest, and consequently they became quite independent learners, very practical, very enterprising, quite manipulative. If it's not in the test when I get them at the university, is this not written in the evaluation? If it's not in the test, if it's not in the exam paper, then why are we doing it? Not going to do it. So they're actually quite focused on what it is they need to do, and they're not going to waste their time doing other things. However, and rightly so, good. The Millennium Generation, though, have come about in a different time. They have grown up in the time when all that technology was around. They really were too young to notice some of the things that happened with the Bali bombings and the Twin Towers and things like that. And consequently, they've grown up feeling very special. This is a rash generalisation, by the way. But I must say that there are some characteristics that you may have been working on in your school wellbeing and the need for resilience. This is where this has come from, the idea that this generation is slightly different and that they can feel a lot of pressure to succeed. They are stimulus junkies, but often if you push them too much, they can break down. They can not be very resilient. They don't know what to do when things go wrong. So we focus on they need to be more resilient. If you're rapidly trying to take notes and everything, I'll see what I can do to put this up somewhere. I'll negotiate with Suzanne that we can put this presentation up so you can have a look at it later. And I know that Graham's recording it as well. His recorder is here somewhere, under there. So you'll have my voice as well as the pictures. Because I know I'm going through this fairly rapidly. What's important is that we give these students opportunities for failure. We're not giving them, setting them up for failure, but what we're trying to do is get them to practice their metacognitive skills so that they actually know what to do to solve problems and take control of the situation and move forwards. So, what's this got to do with ICT? Good thing, I will tell you what it is. But it's got the connection to do with control. This idea that we know that these children need more resilience is perfectly placed for the use of ICT. And what has it got to do with the early years pedagogy? Well, you know that Piaget, Vygotsky, and Bruner were all leading theorists in early childhood education. And if you don't, I'm sure that you have a tacit knowledge of what it is that they do. Bruner in particular has two key things that he talks about, and that is that what is the most important thing for young children is adult responsiveness. Look at me, Mum, look at me, you're not looking, look at me, look at me. They really love the responsiveness. The computer does some things like that, but the adult responsiveness and the relationship behind it is very, very important, as you know as early childhood educators. The other thing is self-initiated activity, very, very important. They need choice, they need to feel in control that they've decided to do that.
Do you want to do this? No, I'm going to do that over there. But they need to have that control. So the main message at the moment is that the greatest challenge that we have is that a lot of the technology has actually started that it was going to replace teachers. We're going to set up computers. This is the 1980s when they first conceptualized computers. We're going to do away with teachers because we can make computer programs, drill and practice that is going to be far more efficient. And what we have found, though, is that that doesn't actually fit with how young children learn. So what we need to do is turn it on its head, and teachers are really important at making sure that children learn to control the technology. And that's why the key was there. It was a key point. Now, it would be amiss of me at the ICT keynote not to make reference to this fantastic work that went on in South Australia. Hands up if you either participated or know of this work. Excellent, fantastic. So I just need to draw your attention that this work was fabulous because it did draw attention to how there were four different concepts about how ICT was being used. And I know there's some picture researchers in the room here, which was really fantastic. So there's the aspect of using technology about the how to use it. There's the aspect about getting meaning from it, the genres, and what's different between the text on the internet and maybe a digital story. There's the critical analyzer, so what's the most appropriate tool for what it is that you want to do? And what can you do with the tools? Which tool can you actually use to transform your knowledge into something else? Okay. So if you don't know what these things are, there are plenty of people in this room to ask and find out more about the multi-literacies map. It's really good because it was South Australian. So again, I'm hammering the point that it really is about the use of ICT and students having control of it, learning to have control about it and monitor their progress and make judgments about their learning. Now, a lot of people always say that really, when you walk into the classroom or you walk into a 1900s operating theatre, that you would be horrified to think that those conditions were still taking place. The argument always gets trotted out. That's why we have to put interactive whiteboards into our classrooms, because when parents walk in, apart from the fact they go, ooh, ah, this must be great school, thus spending a truckload of money on technology, which must be good, is really this idea that the tool is somehow going to do the work by itself. And that is not true. It is not the tool by itself that is going to do it. It is yourselves as educators and how you use it that is really important. So it's about context and the whole configuration of things that are taking place. For example, in the literature, they talk about the term affordances, which just means the potential. What can you do that is better using the technology than what you could do before? Don't run around with a hammer, which is a new tool, looking for a nail, something to do with it, okay? And end up doing old things in the same way. So, for example, really, concrete experiences and the concept of number is really, really important for children to manipulate materials. And to use the technology just to do that is very limited. That's not to say there's not a place for it, but that's really a place to start. There is so much more that you can do after that. So there are four different tools, categories of tools. You could probably argue that there's more, but I'm going to talk about four different tools. And the first one is informative tools. So what we're talking about there is information and instructive drill and practice tools, where we're learning something. Then there's situating tools, simulations and games and contextual experiences. There's constructive tools, which are my favourite, but they're closely followed by communication tools and the new possibilities of connecting your classroom with others beyond the walls of your school. And I'm going to go through some examples of each of these in a moment. But before we do, I want you to think about what are the ways that we use ICT at the moment. Now, we often use direct instruction or, in the case of an interactive whiteboard, the blended instruction approach, and often that is to get through content. It's quite content focused, not always, but it can tend to be. Those approaches tend to be about content. But we can also use the technology to support skills. So thinking skills, the one in the middle is about the Venn diagram, an inspiration, kidspiration Venn diagram, looking at the differences between Winnie the Pooh and, what's his name, Paddington Bear, and looking at the differences between them. Or you might actually use the technology such as Photo Story to make a digital story. So it's the skill of storytelling. The focus is on the pedagogy, not on the technology. Or we can actually use the tools in a way that connect our classrooms with the rest of the world. And I'll explain about Jack's monster cards in a moment. That's from VoiceThread. But the thing that is really the cutting edge of research at the moment, and I'm interested in interactive whiteboards, is this idea of interactivity. What does it mean? A lot of educators, particularly early years, recognise the need for active learners and tactile interaction and kinesthetic movement, and are attracted to the idea of an interactive whiteboard because that's what it's called. However, it is very, very difficult to use it in a classroom when you're concentrating on getting every child to have a turn. It can actually slow the class down and end up much worse than what you started with in the first place. So it is quite difficult to manage that. And as you progress and mature through your use, I think it takes at least a year of knowing how to drive the thing, that then you can actually start turning away from that focus on everyone has to touch the board. But what is important is that interactivity should be thought of in a broader sense. That is actually the cognitive interaction that is going on, the sustained dialogue that is important. So it's not that everyone needs to touch the board for every activity, but more that there's a selection of activities and you need to engage children, a few children in each activity to keep it moving and getting them thinking. Now, small group work is problematic, but as you will know as educators, it is the way to maximise participation. And we can talk about that a bit later on. So let's get back to these different tools. The informative tools, there's two different types. Why they didn't divide them into two different categories, I don't know. Maybe that might be my new paper. But there are these instructive tools. Now, I think there's a range. This is a very broad category. So I think that you've got some good things and some not so good things. You've got in the bottom corner there, digital worksheets. That one's from the Enchanted Learning site. I'm not saying that that doesn't have a place in classrooms. What I'm saying is it does tend to turn into digital worksheets. So how is it? It might reduce your photocopying. Fantastic. But really, is it worth putting, you know, the thousands of dollars for the interactive whiteboard or doing it somehow different? So then there's the Learning Federation, and there are some fantastic things there, and there certainly are some more early childhood literacy things coming, because there's a colleague at Flinders who's been working on some of the literacy resources there. Then there's Talking Books, and there's some fantastic research showing that that can really give accessibility to students to understand and engage with the story, to get meaning with it. And this one's Arthur's, part of the Arthur's series. One of the things they do say is make sure that you've got the text is highlighted as it goes, and make sure whatever you're selecting doesn't actually have a whole lot of distractions happening, so that kids aren't poking around in there with all the bits open and shut and not paying any attention to the text. So just be quite critical in how the things are selected. But to understand that this term interactive, in its purest form, means that children have control of changing the content, and that with this sort of software, a lot of it is like the computer's teaching them something. The program is already determined whether it's an answer or not. So it can be problematic. These are called reactive rather than interactive. And I found that really interesting because I hadn't actually thought about that before. In particular, I draw your attention to the research that was done by the Multiliteracies Project, the Children of the New Millennium, and a little picture there of Evelyn, the case study, and how she was into the Saddle Club and horses, and how she got some information on the internet, and then she decided she picked over it and wanted to transform some of that knowledge into something she was interested in to make a book. what was really important here, the point I want to make, is that downloading information without adult questioning and that interaction is no good by itself. So just giving them access to the internet is not really going to be very functional without the questioning and the purpose behind it, behind the intended learning outcomes. Some other great tools, informative tools, a different type, are more the information tools. So we're talking about here locating and using information on the internet. Is there anyone in here that's used Kids Click before?
Yeah.
Excellent. Now Kids Click is actually a directory that is created by librarians. Now the difference between a search engine and a search directory, I'm not suggesting here that the students have to use this, but it might be a great resource for you to look at where are the good websites to point your children to. So Kids Click could have some great accessible information for young students, and often it is very difficult to try and find the appropriate sites for children that they can access. So Kids Click might be a place for you to go. Let's see, can I go back? Ask Jeeves for Kids is pretty good. I quite like that. I think it is still American, so there is issues around that, but it does have some Australian content. The other thing is Quick. Who's seen the Quick site before? I thought you all put your hands up because I thought you might have all come across this site. This is fabulous. And like I said, the URLs are at the end. Quick is a fabulous website that is about that critical use of the internet information. So I have seen a lot of teachers, and I did it myself, created posters, little posters to put up in the room to get children to think about the information. Where did it come from? How do you know? So can the information be checked? What does the site tell you about choices that you've got, or is it only one point of view? Obviously, it depends on the age of the children that you're working with, but I'm thinking here, say the year twos or threes could actually really start thinking about where this information came from. Who wrote it? Does it look like another student wrote it, or does it actually look like something that has been done really professionally? It's got no mistakes in it, and it might have .gov or .edu on the end. So there's the critical literacy skills. That's what I was drawing attention to there. Of course, there's internet safety issues, and even at our KEGSA meeting the other night, someone brought up the fact that we've had lots of people touring around doing parent tours, parent seminars. Has anyone come across a internet safety net alert type seminar at their school? If you have, often some of the feedback is you've scared the pants off of the parents, and they're really worried about it. Things like Nettie's World, I think, is really fabulous. Nettie's World I particularly like because it brings up these issues.
Play these adventures and stay safe on the net. Click on an adventure to get started.
I won't go through them all, but it does, I won't go through any of them, but I'll show you there that it speaks to the children in a nice animated way, and it actually talks to them about, you know, what are the things you need to consider in order to work safely on the internet, particularly don't give your personal information away, and it's a really, really good website. So Nettie's World. Who's seen the new early childhood aspect of EDNA? Excellent, fantastic. Now, EDNA is the national portal for all things education, and it's actually situated here in Adelaide. We are very, very lucky. We've got some fantastic people. And Cecily Wright is one of the online project people. And I don't think Cecily's here today, is she? No? Okay. Cecily has just taken over the learning projects, and there are some learning quests here, they call them, because they're hard to find too. You actually want to have a situation set up like inquiry learning, but you're using the internet, where websites are already identified and the activities for what the children need to do with it. You don't really have to think too much because it's all been set up for you. So there's one here called Animal Homes. This was for year ones. I'm not saying that it's perfect. What I'm saying is that it's a good opportunity for you to have a look at how someone else has done it and maybe work through this one, see how it goes, pick it to bits, and then say, right, there's someone else in the school with some wiki experience, let's make our own. So particularly the teacher librarian. Always work with your teacher librarian, they're fantastic. Very, very important people. So the reason I draw your attention to the early childhood website of EDNA is that this green section, they've completely redone it since last year, and it's now, you just put www.edna.edu.au and it's got the early childhood newsletter. Who subscribes to the early childhood newsletter? Fantastic. Always fabulous URLs come for the latest themes. You think, oh gosh, what am I going to do this year? Fabulous themes in there. And also it's got curriculum resources that are all done by themes. So it is well worth poking in there. If you haven't heard of EDNA and the early childhood section, you've got to go and poke in there. Kick Cyber is another one that a colleague told me about just recently, and Kate said that Kid Cyber was really good. Oops. And Kid Cyber is actually produced by a teacher librarian, a primary teacher, and again has tried to provide information that is quite accessible to young children. So you might like to check out Kid Cyber. And these URLs are available later. Then there's situating tools. Now I had a really good fun poking around in here because I'd heard about Club Penguin, but I hadn't actually been poking in there, and I didn't know about EduSim, and I blew my socks off because I thought, wow, look at the potential that's in there. That's a new thing that's around now. Now, with these tools, I would say that most educators would be going towards the adventure game that's on the CD-ROM. Now, Granny's Garden has been around for a long time. It's a really, really good game, all right? There are lots of problem solving involved, and you need to justify yourself that it is most appropriate. The research does support the use of it because children need to engage in problem solving and they need to go and do something over here before they can go over here and do something else. There are lots of things they have to think through and solve, and often there's a collaboration of kids going, no, you've got to do this and then you've got to do that and then you've got to do here. And my classroom used to have lots of kids around this going all the time. So it is actually very educational. The other thing is Club Penguin. Now some people, I bet it's because it's blocked in here. I saw a message before. Club Penguin is probably blocked in your schools too. Alright, it may not be. But if you have an open connection at home, I suggest you have a look. And there is a website there. You just click on where it says tutorial. And these are the new things that are coming. I'm not suggesting that you do them with your class, but just around the corner, you're going to get, and it was in the advertiser, was it the advertiser? The Australian recently. It said that children were being asked to sign contracts not to go into Club Penguin during school hours because it is a social networking site. It's like Granny's Garden in a world that you move around and you control your penguin, and you've got a little card that looks like those little Pokemon cards, and you can get tokens for doing good things, and you can move into different rooms, you can chat to other people and all this sort of stuff. And then the alarms start going off, people saying, oh no, that's not good, they're talking to other people and that's dangerous, we shouldn't be doing. But I put it to you that if we don't actually talk about these issues at school, where are these children going to get this information about how to keep themselves safe? So these are the issues that will be facing you soon. So I would suggest you check out Club Penguin and get yourself a penguin and give it a name and go and check it out. It is monitored all the time by adults who are looking to make sure that conversations are quite safe between children and they're not giving exchanges of addresses and stuff. Now EduSim, look, it's going to block me out of here as well. Good thing that I have backup plans and I can talk about something else. EduSim, when I first saw it, blew my mind. If you have seen computer games, the 3D computer games, who's been to Second Life? Okay. Second Life is like a game, except for there is no set game. It is a virtual world. But you have an avatar, which is an online identity, and it has a name and you look like something. In the case of EduSim, everyone looks like a rabbit. You end up with great big ears, and and you see wherever the rabbit's going, you just see the back of the rabbit's head with his ears. Wherever the rabbit is, that's where you're looking. But this is the tool, it's just been released recently, in January in fact, where they are using it with a smart board, and the video shows that it has different worlds available, so that you might choose to use the Mars module or the underwater module, and it comes looking like the underwater world or the Mars environment. And children build and draw and add photos and text, all three-dimensional, by click, 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 drag. They draw little jellyfish with their fingers on the smart board or any other interactive whiteboard, doesn't have to be smart, and then they drag it onto the world, and then you can do your 3D project in there or leave things for other people. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to change your world today, because you might be going, what's the point of that? I don't see any use of it. But what I'm saying is, this is the future. These 3D environments are the future. This idea of the flat internet text-based is going to change. It's all going to slowly, well, maybe not so slow, evolve. And EduSim is free. You download it on your computer, and off you go. You've got it all here. And I think it's got a lot of potential. So if you're an early adopter, check it out. Constructive tools. These are my favourite, I think, because you get to actually make new stuff. You become a producer of new things and very much sit in the transferring of the learning into something that is new. So who's done play animation with young children? Excellent. Who's thought about it and thought, oh my God, you've got to be kidding. If you want to engage your children in storytelling, play animation is fabulous. But there are some management issues around. You've got to keep everything still while you've got all your photos together, and some adult help would be fantastic. Maybe one story going in the in another room and having some parent help would be fabulous, because it can be a management issue. But what a hoot it is when it's finished and sharing it with everybody. So, and I know that Sonia is going to do a session on clay animation today, so I would highly recommend you go and check it out. Because she's done it with her year one class, I think it was. Where is Sonia? I saw you before. She's out, setting up. Okay, there's a new Kidspiration around. Anyone use the new Kidspiration? It's probably the age-old problem where you've got, gosh, you know, we can only afford one lot of software, it's going to be Inspiration, not Kidspiration, so the young children tend to miss out. But I would get some people on your ICT committee and say, hang on, we need to actually have an evaluation process to make sure we've got software that's available for our students. So Kidspiration definitely is a fabulous product. There's the kiddie pads. It would be amiss of me not to mention Anne-Marie's National Award and the use of the kiddie pads. Hands up if you know about that. Okay, kiddie pads. Do you remember Jim Edson? We used to have TESOF here. Sad, very sad. I used to work there. Kiddie pads, fantastic for standing on, creating sound effects and getting children to have that movement and participation. What's the appropriate sound to match the story? If you're really into it, like Jim was, you can actually put it all together with a PowerPoint where the kids have put all their drawings in there that come together as a story, and the music coordinates with the story. You've got lights, you've got parents, and it turns into a performance, and it's fabulous. So you can just have fun with it in any way you like. There's two programs that have been highly recommended in the UK. They've spent a lot of money on early years research, and the number one and two programs that they talk about are KidPix, would you believe? The idea of creativity. Now look, I used to love it, and a lot of people would say, why are we bothering with that, because that's rubbish. They just sit there and they draw stuff, and what's the point? Well, it's about creativity, people. It's actually about these young children having control of technology, being able to express themselves, and as they get older, you might be able to use the trucks and put it together as a story. So it's very, very important. They nominated that and other creative paint programs as really, really important. The second thing that they've talked about is this control technologies. Now, I must admit, when I was asked the question about, tell me about control technologies for young children, the first thing that popped into my mind was Lego robotics. And yes, it is a lot of fun, and I've done it with kids, and it's wonderful. But the management issues of those little pieces and all the bits, really, you have to be one of those energetic teachers that can cope with stress. So, which you cope with stress all the time, you don't really need any more of all these bits going missing.
But they are using this thing called ROMA, and it is, in fact, ICT is compulsory as a separate subject in the UK. And one of the things that they are using is this little robotic device called ROMA. And it's like Logo. If you know about Seymour Papert's idea, he thought the world was going to change because children could control technology through the turtle and it's through computer programming. The same principle applies here, but through a large tool that the children program. It's got buttons on there, like you need forward, three, 90 degree turn, forward, three, whatever, and you can do mazes and make it drive around. I'm not sure how expensive it is, the links are here, but that is something that they, I read a lot of stuff on it, that they're using about five times a year, so you might want one in your classroom to test it out and share it across the school. So they're using that for children to do that cognitive thinking and making sure that the concrete experience of the robot is actually doing what it is that they want it to do, and it's not going right. Well, don't just get up and cry. What is it that we need to do? Okay, we've got a problem. We need to actually go back. Is the problem here? Let's walk through it. And that's that resilience coming through. The other thing is, I know some of you have interactive whiteboards and possibly the digital microscope. I did the National Science Summer School recently, and gee, there was a lot of flack from the scientists and the math people saying that those interactive whiteboards and these digital microscopes are rubbish. You convince me that there's any value in there. It's like, hello, this is actually their world for young children. They get to see a different side of things that are going on in their world that they don't normally get to experience. So you can find that really engaging. I know that Judy Beale sitting over here has had some wonderful experiences with children picking up all sorts of things and having a good look at them and start driving the questions and the problem-solving inquiry approach. So digital microscopes could be an excellent part of that. Who's used the National Virtual Manipulatives? Gee, you're missing out on an opportunity here. This is the K-2. I'm just going to pick out one, and you might think this is no good, but there's stacks of this stuff in here. It's from the UK. Because they have really spent a lot of money, it's the natural, the virtual manipulatives, and there's one here called Ladybug Mazes, and I'm picking on this one because it ties in with the ROMA control technologies. That link between the experiences that are concrete and also how that might be translated into the use of the technology. So you can show the maze, and I'm not an expert at this, but you can imagine a group of children standing around together, the interactive whiteboard, and going, because this is all free, right, now what do we have to do? We want it to go forwards, and then we're going to just check that. Is that all right? Yeah, okay. Now after that, we want it to go, do we want it to do 90 degree turn? Okay. Now this is the criticism that has come out, that just because children do these things doesn't mean that they automatically understand what 90 degrees are. Just because they push that button doesn't mean that they know those things. So please make sure that you make those links with what they're doing with concrete materials with the programming. But there's opportunities to do things together. Now I need to do my hurry up. I've got about 5 minutes or so. The communicative tools. These are really fun. VoiceThread, I think, has fantastic potential. VoiceThread is free. You'll have to check whether it's blocked in your schools or not, and if it is, let me know, and we'll make sure that it gets unblocked. The trouble is with this blocking, they want to make sure that kids are safe all the time. They can't guarantee what's in there. Basically, there's a classroom section in here, which is monitored to make sure that only good stuff gets in here. But VoiceThread, there's a little boy who's going to speak about his picture in a minute, and he's going to talk about his dragon. He's made some cards to do with dragons.
Yeah, those are some scary teeth.
Oh, where he is? Where he is?
This monster's name is Sword Dragon Man. It was the first card I ever made. called him Sword Dragon Man because he's the guard of the Dragon King.
I won't play it all because I'm conscious of the time, but I would suggest that you check it out. What is really powerful about this is not that he tells about his artwork that he's put up. You just browse and go put that picture up there, or a video, but that people can respond. All these pictures around the side, like parents, have actually commented. You can put it up, tell your parents, go and comment on your child's work. And in particular, another class went there and commented.
My class really likes this drawing, and especially we like the tail and the black pointy things sticking on the top.
So you've got that feedback coming. So I think that has a lot of potential. This one here is a podcast by the early years. These were, I think the ants was the one I wanted to have a look at. These were first graders.
Greetings from the ant world. You have accessed Radio Willowweb, a broadcast providing educational information about ants. Hi, I'm Sarah, your host. My first grade friends and I are here to tell you a little about those amazing ants. We will talk about how ants traveled in the space shuttle, how long ants have existed.
We won't play it all, but their teacher actually connected with the kit that you could buy to get the ants up in the space shuttle, and they talk about this episode. So, wow, isn't that awesome where you've got children talking about this? One thing that I would say is that they're communicating one way. They're giving their voice out about their project. It would be good if it was actually put on a blog, which I'll show you in a minute, where parents could comment back about that experience. But I thought, hey, this is really cool. This is a polished piece that would have actually taken quite a lot of work and a lot of literacy work. And that you don't have to do these lessons instantly. There's another one here, a blog. Now, a blog is like an online diary. And I know that Sonia has a blog, so if you want to pick her brains today, she's actually an early years educator who's had a blog. Now, the Lorax, I have no idea what it is, but I gather it's some sort of tree spirit. The teacher librarians will probably go, of course. Dr. Zeus, of course it is. There you go, the Lorax. So they must have done something about the Lorax, and now they've actually put up their little videos. Oh, God, don't like technology. This one was working. No, I reckon it's blocked. Yeah. With all this stuff, there is an issue here. The more people get excited about these things, the more it's going to become an issue of being blocked. And this is why our professional association, KEGSA, is hopping up and down, or is about to say, look, we need to get some voices of teachers and say, we want to use this stuff. Now, what's really good about a blog is that something goes up, a story goes up, and let's have a look. Something happens and you can get comments back. So they planted a garden, here's a picture, there's some writing about it. This is really easy to do. You don't have to know web programming to do this. You just type in the text and it's free. Right. So these are the tools that are out there, the Web 2 tools. And then down the bottom, there's always room for comments and someone can come along and push comments and comment back. So your classroom newsletter is now going to turn into something that is a ongoing resource. I used to make yearbooks with my classes, but they got them at the end of the year. You could actually have your blog where it was compiling all the time and getting feedback from people. Like, I just think that's the way to go. Oz Projects, part of Edna. There's online projects there for early years. All sorts of fantastic things there. You can do a search for online projects for particular year levels that you're involved in. The other thing is, and I've got to rip through here and have my conclusion, but who knows about Henry down at Glenelg for seal? Put your hand up if you know about Henry. Okay, you may have read about Henry. Henry is a seal. He actually swims past the coastline where I live, and at Merino there, they've just made up a website for him. He's only around, this tracker is on him for till early April, because he actually swallowed a plastic bag and threw up that and cooked prawns or something, and he was really, really ill, so they checked him out, put a tracker on him, and are just really interested to see where this seal goes. He's quite a local celebrity down there. And you can track where he is in real time and zoom up. Now, it brings in all sorts of environmental issues about looking after the coastline, your behaviour around wild animals, not feeding them things. So there's a wealth of stuff that you can do there as well. But check out Henry. I'll just start winding up here. I'll go through this quickly. I'm quite passionate about the idea that you don't do once-off ICT projects. You need to think about, seriously, long-term projects that maybe take a turn. You don't have to spend all of your time doing it. You still need the literacy hour, you still need the numeracy activities, you still need everything else that's going on. But I think that it is a lot more meaningful to set a project and think at the beginning, what are the outcomes that I want at the end? Backwards by design is a Wiggins and McTighe inquiry learning approach. So you would start by thinking, okay, what's the learning that's really important? What are the outcomes that we want? What are some of the things, what are the technologies that we could use that could actually transform the learning? So it could be, I'm going to use that voice thread, or I'm going to set up a blog, or we're going to do something or other else. Now, how can we use it in a way that's going to get those outcomes? And make sure you've clearly focused on what the learning is and where the technology fits in it, and then go backwards and say, now, how do we begin? What's an inquiry question that we could shape up together that is still a question and open-ended, that we've got the goal in mind, but the way we get there could be all sorts of things. I'm not going to go through that, and this is coming to the end. Basically, this is my little cartoon to emphasise that just because you've got lots of bells and whistles, now I need a topic. I've got everything else in there, but now I need a topic. Awesome special effects. Okay, and the conclusion. Oops. It's not going to be much time for questions, I'm afraid. The millennial generation expects to use ICT. The question isn't whether they should be using it, it's how we're actually going to best use it. It needs to be about children taking control of the technology. It should be about pedagogy as well as technology, and not the teacher doing everything, but actually the children, handing control to the children. Now that's scary and it doesn't happen overnight. And the role of the teacher is to facilitate interactivity in its broadest sense and actually higher order thinking skills. You need to think about that. Apply the knowledge that they learn. I think designing a cycle of learning is the way to go. Not just once-off activities. Tell me what I can do when I go to the computer lab. Tell me what I can do using my interactive whiteboard and the little computer inside, and also when I go to the lab. And yes, there are heaps of issues around access and technical support and everything. But also make sure that you use less drill and practice and more of the creative, open-ended opportunities for ICT. And do what you do well. Connect with the children's individual interests and their needs and build on their skills. That is exactly what you do as early years educators, and you are the best people placed to set the standard for everybody else. And have fun learning together using ICT. To find these URLs, I know that Graham is going to do a delicious section later, a workshop perhaps, but he's also an expert who can tell you about how to get all these URLs. Hands up if you've got a delicious account. Excellent. Now if you haven't, this is your opportunity to learn something new. You go to the website, HTTP, there's no www in there, and you go delicious. Okay, it's got, you need the full stops. If you don't put it in, just type delicious and it will go there. And then you just type in that much, and you'll need to put in, you'll have to create yourself a free account. Right? I'll hand it to Graham later on to pick this up later on. And Kesa can also offer you some support on how to create this. You will never look back. Once you create one, it manages all your URLs.